My name's Pitt, and your ass ain't talking your way out of this shit.
Welcome to the Holy Sh** Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy sh**. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast for December 4th, 2019, episode number 51. Actually, 51. I'm your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm co-host Frank Natel. 51, that's amazing.
Frank, 51. Next week's going to be a big one. But boy, today has been big, you know? There's a whole lot I know you're just itching to get to, so... Without wasting any time, why don't I just hand it over to you and let's get busy.
Sounds great, Patsy. I know you're not 100%, so thanks for still hosting this and making sure that we get this on, and especially it's the penultimate episode of the year for 1 year for us. Really cool stuff. But, you know, wanted to take us in a different direction than what we normally do, especially given the events of today. You know, I think everybody that listens to our podcast would know that we would jump right in on the events of today, and that would be our normal course, and we will get to those things. But I wanted to start out with something a little different, and it's interesting because, you know, this is a current news, a current events podcast, and one of the current events that has happened since our last podcast in the political world is that one of the major players in the Democratic primary, Kamala Harris, dropped from the race, and she wasn't the only one. We lost a total of three candidates since the last primary debates, and she, to me, just was one of the most major ones. I didn't expect or see that coming, and even in, you know, the point of fact that she was having some difficulties, her polling was going lower, and there were some troubles inside of her campaign, what I would characterize as minor troubles at this point in time, just things that happen. She dropped out of the race, and there were two others, and we can talk about them if you want to, but Kamala Harris to me was the most surprising, and I think in a strategic sense, maybe, I guess, looking at it as I step back away from it, makes the most sense for her to do it when she did it. But what do you think about her dropping out at this moment, at this atmosphere?
First of all, excuse me, I didn't mean to cough. I was a bit surprised, especially whenever she had a pack about ready to drop some big money in, I want to say, Iowa. You know, that kind of shocked me a little bit. I knew her campaign was struggling. You know, and to be honest, Frank, and you know what a big supporter of hers that I am, and well, I was, right? You heard me talk, you know, scream from the top of the mountain from the day she announced her run that I'm all in with her, right? And she was the horse I was backing, so to speak.
Right.
It is a bit unfortunate that, you know, really the only, I don't want to say total minority because that kind of sounds a little degrading, but an African-American woman, the only one there, you know, there's another African-American, there's a couple other women, but she was the only one that was the hit at all. And still, in my opinion, the strongest one, the strongest candidate is no longer in the race. I'm hoping, you know, trying to put a positive spin on this, or trying to get a good vibe that whoever the Democrat is that wins, I'm not so sure. I'm hoping for her to be the vice presidential pick, although she would be a good one. But boy, I would love to see her as AG. So I'm kind of on a fence with. I'm disappointed because my pick is out, and I really thought she was the one. But in a way, I'm looking at it like it might be a positive thing, because whatever position she's going to fill, and you got to assume that she's going to fill somebody's position, you know, some position in the next administration, that she's just going to be dynamite at it.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting take on it. And I think it kind of dovetails with something I was thinking about, but quite frankly, is
I'm actually, it's a viewpoint that, although it makes total sense, as you say it, I really hadn't thought about it in those terms. So it's a just a masterful point that you bring up. What I was thinking about with her is, you know, there's a point of kind of diminishing returns in a campaign like this, where you can stay too long and hurt the party. You could stay too long and hurt yourself. And I think that, you know, we saw that to some extent. There's some bitterness towards, you know, Bernie Sanders from the last election, right?
Yes.
There's some bitterness amongst Democrats. There's some bitterness amongst progressive liberal folks, you know, whichever way you want to cut it, because he stayed till the bitter end last time. You know, I was of the mind at that point in time, and I still am, that he needed to do that. He wasn't an entrenched party Democrat. However, I do see the effect that it had, both on him and the party. And I think Kamala Harris, maybe, she looked at this as, what good am I going to do the party, and what good am I going to do myself if I stay in this? Because she could become a distraction in some ways to the party, in the sense that it could have been a real point or a wedge point in the party if folks had made it a racial issue solely. Mm-hmm. And I mean that from the standpoint of, you know, folks who support her, not you particularly, I'm not saying this about you, but folks that support her, and if her numbers would continue to dwindle, and if her numbers and her money wouldn't necessarily back up the position in the debates, so to speak, it could become a real thorny issue for the Democrats to answer and say, why are you pushing the only, you know, clear minority woman off the stage? And I think that maybe there was an act of selflessness here. And I'm just really assuming this at this point in time. But maybe there was an act of selflessness on her part. And she's also young. She's also very smart. And regardless of whether or not she gets a position in the next administration, I think this kind of sets her up for future runs. You know, in politics, you're not done until you're done. You know, there's always going to be a next election cycle. So right. I think this is one of those things where she can really not only benefit the party, but benefit herself later on if she takes no damage from this point forward, which, why would there be damage unless you're going to aim at her if she was going to be the vice presidential candidate, right? Then somebody's going to try to aim at her and take her down a notch. But if she's not that, you know, nobody's going to be taking pot shots at her from this point forward. So she can continue to strengthen her position, strengthen her reputation, strengthen her donors and her donor capacity, sharpen her, you know, whatever her philosophy would be for the next time. So that's kind of my take as I stepped back away from it and I thought about it, what might be going on there.
Yeah, I to this day still question Bernie's motives, though. I do not understand, Frank, being an independent, right? And there's a reason I'm an independent. It isn't just because it was like, well, I know Democrats and I know Republicans, and hey, I don't know too many independents, so I'll fill a void, right? There was a reason I'm an independent. And the fact that he was able to run for president as a Democrat whenever he was a registered Republican to this day bothers me. But that's another story for another time. I agree with the damage aspect of it. And to be honest, I never thought of that. She's kind of keeping herself clean, right? And again, that's I'm not insinuating or implying anything. It's just that, let's face it, the further this goes now, the dirtier it's going to get, the more in the weeds things are going to go, and she's keeping herself pristine now. That's number one. I don't think that was her intent. I think the intent was, you know, they have their internal polling, they have their internal data. They know a whole lot more about how these things are playing out than, you know, the general public does, just because we watch CNN or MSNBC or whatever. So they have a far better grip on everything than we do. And for whatever reason, she decided now's the time to get out. You made a good point about the optics of maybe pushing out the only African-American woman. And I thought that was a really good point. But whatever it was, she did it. I feel bad that her campaign never got much traction. I think maybe looking back on it from her perspective, maybe they made a few mistakes and, you know, behind the scenes that maybe they shouldn't have made. I don't know. I'm purely guessing at this point, honest to God, I am. But, you know, for whatever reason, she's out. Now she gets to focus on the impeachment trial and not have to worry about running for anything. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the tweet I sent out, but
it was an excellent tweet. Go ahead and talk about it.
She Trump tweeted something like, "So long, Kamala. Nice try. Or we're gonna miss you, or some
we'll miss you. Yeah,
yeah, some shit like that." And I responded to that with, you really shouldn't be too happy about this, because now she just gets to focus on you. She made Brett Kavanaugh cry. She made Barr look like a fool. Imagine what she's going to do to your cowardly ass, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but she's going to be masterful to watch whenever this trial finally goes. Well, whenever it finally has the trial. So she's not done by any means. Not by any means.
No, she's going to be a player, you know, on the national stage for a lot of reasons. And your tweet was spot on. And it's, you know, it's the short-sighted or the myopic view of this president that because she disappeared from the, you know, the primary, that somehow that's going to benefit him because he could take a pot shot at her for some reason now. But yeah, absolutely. You're spot on. She can now focus on him. And, you know, that's another way to make a political name for yourself. If you continue to show your chops to the public in this kind of proceeding, it only is going to raise her stock for the future. So I think, you know, I welcome the fact that she will be able to focus her energies on that. I will truly miss her as a candidate. I was waiting to kind of see how things shook out between her and Warren, because I've been kind of supporting Warren. I realize that her policies, and we can talk about this another day, but I realize her policies are much more progressive than most of the other candidates. The concern I have, and I really don't want to go down this road at this point in time, but the concern I have with the Democratic Party is we, as Democrats, and I'm in that camp because I am a Democrat as opposed to an independent, I feel like we have continuously been pulled to the right. Everything we do, we talk about, even Barack Obama, who I think was a fantastic president, has come out and said we need to be a little bit more centrist, we need to be a little bit less, idealistic in our viewpoints. And, you know, I understand that from the sentiment of wanting to reach the center. I do. But I also think that the Republicans have continued to go further and further right, and the Democrats just keep moving more and more to the center. There really isn't anybody that will get into office that will truly espouse progressive ideas. Like I said to you before in this podcast, almost maybe a year ago, if Bernie Sanders is the progressive candidate, we're really not a progressive country, because his ideas are from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And things are going on in the world. Free healthcare has been going on in Canada for, you know, decades. It's been in Italy for decades. It's not a novel concept. But for us here, you know, Medicare for all seems to be like, oh, you're selling lightning in a bottle. I mean, it's some kind of crazy idea. No, it's been going on in the world for quite some time. So anyway, moving on from that, just to give folks their due, I did say that there were two other candidates. One who dropped out on December 1st, probably nobody has even really heard of him, but he's a Pennsylvanian, so I want to give him his due. Joe C. Stack suspended his presidential run. And Steve Bullock, who I think a lot more people did hear of because he's a very moderate, here we go again, centrist Democrat out of the state of Montana, he dropped out on December 2nd, just a day or so ago. He's another young guy, 53 years old, for a presidential run, so to speak. So he's got a lot of years ahead of him. And I think he's another one that, kind of along the lines of what you said, he may end up in an administration at some point in time. So, I don't think we've heard the last of Steve Bullock.
Let me ask you, just a quick question, Frank, because we do have a lot to cover. You and I, an independent and a Democrat, are rather progressive. I think that's a pretty fair statement, right? Anybody who's listened to this podcast over the last almost year, will say maybe, you know, wow, they're really progressive. These two are really, it's hard to believe we're, you know, middle-aged white guys, right? Do you think that the country, however, is more centrist, or do you think that the country is moving more toward the left, more toward the progressive side?
I think that, you know, it's hard for me to speak to the entire country because
I know.
I've been in Pennsylvania for a majority of my life, and I still have strong ties and strong presence in Pennsylvania. And then, you know, I have a strong presence in Maryland, and Maryland's a very progressive state. I will tell you that by comparison to most of Pennsylvania, the ideas, the willingness to embrace new ideas, to embrace new people, is much stronger in Maryland than it is in Pennsylvania. And I wish and hope for a day when I can say Pennsylvania has, you know, grown to that level. And I think I see it in some places, in some ways in Pennsylvania. So by virtue of the fact that I'm seeing it happen in Pennsylvania to some extent, I think that we are slowly moving to a more progressive approach to things. But I would have to say that as a country, you know, and just taking reading and hearing views and voices from around the country, I would say that it's mostly a centrist. It's a centrist country. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. But, you know, I think the farming rural community has a lot to do with that. I think if you're looking at more places where the populations are a lot more dense, in other words, you know, cities, not necessarily, you know, LA and New York, because that's what you think of, but even cities, you know, the size of Pittsburgh or Cleveland, I think are far more progressive than, you know, Billings, Wyoming or something like that. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that seems to be where the issue is, you know, but I think you're right. I think overall the country is more centrist, but I also think that overall the country is moving left. It might be going, you know, kicking and screaming along the way, but I think it's going that way. It's just going to take some time. But yeah, I agree with you right now. And I'll tell you something else. I think that's why Pete Buttigieg is gaining the attention he is, because he seems to be the quote-unquote moderate of the whole bunch.
Right.
Well, him and Joe. But I agree with you that we are slowly, in spite of ourselves, moving to the left.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's a good question. It's a good analysis, and it's something to consider when you're thinking about who can come out of a primary on either side of the party. I mean, I think the Republicans are stuck with Trump, mm-hmm. but, you know, at least in this election cycle. But as we move forward, Democrats and Republicans looking to try to win general elections, you know, as a general rule, are going to try to have somebody who appeals to the masses, who appeals to the centrist philosophies that, you know, don't rock the boat too much. Let's keep things, you know, kind of where they are. But I think that we have to, as a country, and the kicking and screaming part is where it goes, is that, you know, we have to, as a country, continue to adapt and change. I mean, you know, we don't have horse and buggy in most of the country anymore. You know, in Pennsylvania, you go up to Kmart in Lawrence County, and yeah, you'll see a few horse and buggy because the Amish still live there. But for the most part, the mode of transportation is a car. And soon you're going to be seeing a lot more autonomous cars. Right. So are we going to build roadways that accommodate autonomous vehicles and driver vehicles, or are we going to just mix the autonomous vehicles in with the driver vehicles? You know, we're going to have to adapt to these things as a country. Are we going to adapt to the need for, you know, better healthcare, better housing for seniors than just warehousing seniors, because people are going to probably live longer because medicine is improving. You would expect that. We have an aging population versus the amount of younger people. So we're going to have to deal with that issue. So we have issues that face us as a country and as a, you know, as a world, so to speak, that require us to come up with new ideas and to treat things differently than we have always treated them. That's why it's so weird to just sit there and say, let's go backwards. This whole philosophy that Trump has pushed, that we want to go backwards, you know, with things. And that's what really underlies, you know, a lot of his campaign. Let's just isolate, let's, you know, return to what we think was a time of greatness, which is very
very backward, so to speak. So it's just strange.
I don't want to interrupt you or change the subject totally, but our podcast is Holy Shit. Here's a Holy Shit moment for you. It just happened. Manchester United beat Tottenham 2-1.
Wow. And I saw your text to me earlier about, or your message on our Discord server about today would be a great day to bet on Tottenham. And I thought,
This is why I did that.
I wasn't ready to pull that trigger. I will say that I don't bet much. Sports gambling is legal in Pennsylvania, and I was in Pennsylvania this weekend, and I placed a bet on the Texans to beat the New England Patriots. It's the first sports bet I've made in about 3 months, and so that tells you something. And I was really kind of feeling the Texans at home against the Patriots. I haven't had a feeling about any soccer games for a while, and that one worried me today. So
I got $20 sitting on Fox Bet on my Fox Bet. I got $20 sitting there, and I wanted to do it in the worst way, and I was Frankie, have no idea how close I was to pulling the trigger on that. And then a little you know, like, voice inside my head said, "It's soccer. You're betting on soccer. You couldn't hit water if you fell out of a boat." So luckily I listened to that little voice.
Good for you. So we also have this what's been going on with, you know, our pal Lindsey Graham, who you know, Lindsey seems torn in a lot of ways in his life. And I don't want to make judgments about his personal life, but, you know, we've talked about, my God, if you are who you are, then just be who you are. You know, I don't really care what your choices are, but, you know, don't hide it forever. I mean, the man's like, what, 60 years old, and he's been a lifelong bachelor, and you don't hear many stories about him. He's not the Derek Jeter bachelor, you know.
No, he is not.
He doesn't give the gift bag to the girls as they're leaving his apartment. So, you know, but again, I'm not trying to make light of that. I'm just saying, like, just be who you are, man. Just be who you are. And
I wonder if he's worried about being reelected, right? In his district, he'll never be reelected,
right? If he ever was who he is, so to speak. So
if he ever admitted it, yeah.
So, but anyway, you know, he's also torn in this idea of, if you've looked at his past statements of saying, you know, if we elect Trump, we're gonna get absolutely torn to shreds, and we'll deserve it, you know. And then, you know, he said who Trump is. He's called him what he is, a misogynist, a racist, you know, he's called him flat out exactly what Trump is. And then he turns around and becomes Trump's best buddy and biggest defender. And now we've seen this slow erosion of that, very, very slow, quiet erosion of that. The most recent example of that was, if we've looked at, and we've talked about folks who, like Kennedy down in Louisiana, who in the same interview has gone full circle from saying, it was the Ukraine, not Russia, who interfered in our elections, and then saying, well, you don't know who it is, nobody knows who it is, to being confronted by the interviewer and saying, and I think this was on Fox News, being confronted by the interviewer on Fox News saying, you absolutely know that the intelligence agencies, every single intelligence agency has told us that it's Russian interference, not Ukrainian interference. And he backs down to that. And then he comes out the next day and says the same thing, that maybe the Ukrainians were involved. So that craziness, that level of craziness that in the defense of Trump exists out there. However, Lindsey Graham has recently said unequivocally that it's absolutely the Russians, and that it is absolutely not the Ukrainians who involved themselves or inserted themselves in our 2016 election, that he has absolutely no doubt it is 100% the Russians. And this undercuts Trump's argument. It undercuts the GOP talking points. And, you know, it happened when Trump was out of the country. Trump was attending this international meeting, and Lindsey Graham made these comments. So it strikes me, it just both in the tone of the comments and also in the timing of the comments. What do you think about it?
Oh, you know, I look at Lindsey Graham as somebody who's running scared.
Yeah.
You know, and whenever you act and you make decisions out of fear, you get in the position where Lindsey Graham is in now. You lose your credibility. You lose your dignity, right? You lose. You almost sell your soul in order to because you're so scared of this you know, this whatever it is that you're hiding, or whatever it is you don't want people to find out about, or whatever it is you don't want people to take advantage of, you're so scared of all of that developing that you make, like I said, you make yourself look the fool. He said this whenever Trump was away. I'm half tempted to believe that he didn't do it because Trump was away. He just happened to be away whenever Graham had a moment of weakness or clarity or whatever you want to say. But look, I always found it funny that everything John McCain did, Lindsey Graham was there, right? I mean, I swear to God, he couldn't go take a shit without Lindsey Graham being there next to him, you know? And whenever... whenever McCain passed, I think that kind of put Graham in a tailspin, not because he was, you know, that devastated by Graham, by McCain dying, but because McCain kind of kept him, kind of kept him on a straight and narrow. Right, it kind of gave him focus and kind of gave him the shade and the cover that he needed. McCain just took the bullets.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And now that shield, that buffer is gone, and now he's exposed. And now he doesn't have somebody to hold, have his back or fight his battles for him or with him or whatever it is. It was real easy for Trump or Putin or somebody to make that phone call and say, "Hey, you may want to think about what you're doing here, because we know a few things, and if you don't play ball, everybody's going to know a few things." And I really think that's real. I mean, I might be off with some of the technical things, but I think as a gist, until I can be proven different, that's what I'm sticking with.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's easier to pick off one than it is to pick off two. And, you don't have the cover of John McCain being the maverick who could kind of be the first one out there taking the bullets, and then Lindsey was backing him up. It's a lot easier for the Russians or whoever else is supplying the compromise to pick off one than it is to pick off two. So it makes a lot of sense. Anything else about Lindsey or the Ukraine, just in a vacuum, the Ukraine and Russia thing, or would you want to move on to the events of today?
What really gets me, and Frank, you're on my floor, twice a week, or at least once a week, and your son's on twice a week. I have a need, a desire for not trying to bullshit people, okay? I don't mean a car salesman will try to bullshit you, right? I'm not talking about minor things like that. But whenever I do something or explain something or I demonstrate something, I do it because I know it works. And the longer you stay with me, you'll find that a lot of what I do and what I show you is kind of contrary to the quote-unquote curriculum that certain organizations expect us to follow, because my way works better, okay? Right. And I'm more than willing to be called out on it, if I am called out on it, I can make a very good argument as to why I do it this way or how I show it this way. And pretty much daring somebody to prove me wrong. Whenever I see Graham get on TV or I see Kennedy get on TV, as you mentioned Kennedy, about how they continuously push a narrative that everybody in the fucking world knows is fake and false, I look at it, why are you trying to insult me? Why are you trying to, why do you think I'm this stupid that I can't see this? I can't figure this out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I don't understand why the people that they're trying to reach, because let's face it, they know they're not going to reach us, right? You, me, the people in our Discord group, they're never going to reach us. We're beyond their reach. Why they continuously try to insult the intelligence of these people that they're trying to grab a hold of, and why these people continuously let them do it. It's very difficult for me to wrap my head around, and I get very, very frustrated whenever I see or hear that stuff.
And I understand why, and I think that's part of the, I guess, you know, probably the consciousness that has been offended in our country for 3 years now, that is causing people to walk around pretty grumpy, pretty upset, pretty on edge, pretty anxiety riddled. It's why, you know, when folks jump on this idea of saying, you know, you're a snowflake, blah, blah, blah. No, we're pretty upset with people just hitting us in the face with these absurdities and going on and on as if they're truths, and as if they have some, you know, backing to it. And that we're living in this bizarro world that we have to deal with, you know, straight up just kooky ideas like this. So, yeah, I mean, I get it.
Yeah. So it's tough, but you know what, let's move on.
All right. Well, I think we can flow into a couple of other topics. One being what's going on today. You know, we've got the first day of actual Judiciary Committee hearings in the House that are being presided over by Jerry Nadler, Representative Jerry Nadler. And I guess the biggest takeaway from today for me was there were constitutional law professors who testified today about what they were trying to give both a current context and a historical context to what the Constitution and what the framers of the Constitution would have wanted or would have thought about in terms of impeachment. So they're trying to frame it so that those folks who are going to eventually vote or not vote to impeach the president would have an expert tell them, does this meet the definitions as they were for impeachment? And, you know, there were questions today that went as far as saying, what do you think the framers, the people who wrote these provisions about impeachment, would have thought about the conduct of our current president? And they asked about specific conduct. You know, they asked about whether it was bribery, whether it met the definition of bribery. So we can get into details in a little bit, but I think just as a general thing, just the idea that they brought in constitutional law professors to kind of start this particular proceeding, and remember, it is a judiciary proceeding. What are your thoughts about calling those expert witnesses first?
You know, funny you should mention that. Did you happen to see the beginning of this? Oh, by the way, as we're recording the Judiciary Committee's impeachment hearing is still going on. Okay.
Yes.
So it's not, folks, it's not like we're trying to ignore it or trying to blow over it. It's still happening. So, you know, just sorry, but it's hard to comment on things that are happening right now while we're doing this podcast. However, earlier, and I want to play this for you, Frank, because you just this was perfect. Your segue was typically perfect. Did you happen to hear Doug Collins? He's the Republican from Georgia. He's the ranking minority member on the Judiciary Committee. His statements and Professor Carlin's response to his opening statements. Because you are in for a treat. If you did,
let's hear it.
This made my. I don't even care what happens. Right, I heard this. I was thrilled. So here we go.
Is America will see why most people don't go to law school. No offense to our professors, but please, really, we're bringing you in here today to testify on stuff that most of you've already written about. All four, with the opinions that we already know. Out of the classrooms that maybe you're getting ready for finals in, to discuss things that you probably haven't even had a chance to, unless you're really good on TV, the hearings, you couldn't have possibly actually digested the Adam Schiff report from yesterday or the Republican response in any real way. So we are here, no plan, no fact witnesses, simply being a rubber stamp for what we have. But hey, we got law professors here. What a start of a party.
Today, you're being asked to consider whether protecting those elections requires impeaching a president. That is an awesome responsibility. But everything I know about our Constitution and its values, and my review of the evidentiary record, and here, Mr. Collins, I would like to say to you, sir, that I read transcripts of every one of the witnesses who appeared in the live hearing, because I would not speak about these things without reviewing the facts. So I'm insulted by the suggestion that as a law professor, I don't care about those facts. But everything I read on those occasions tells me that when President Trump invited, indeed demanded foreign involvement in our upcoming election, he struck at the very heart of what makes this a republic to which we pledge allegiance. That demand, as Professor Feldman just explained, constituted an abuse of power.
I'm just going to sit back and hear your response.
That's a smackdown. My man, my man, I don't know if my man went to law school, Mr. Collins, or he didn't go to law school, but if he, you know, if he sounded envious of people who had, sounded like he was a little jealous, and, you know, he sounds like he's butthurt because he can't call himself a law professor, and he wanted to take a snarky shot at a law professor, thinking that she wouldn't have been prepared or that she would have kowtowed to him somehow. But listen, she sees, you know, snot-nosed, smart-ass, you know, millionaire kids that come through Stanford every year that she has to put in their place, I'm sure. And she works, you know, amongst other faculty that are smart, super smart people that all have opinions, and they challenge each other with their opinions and they debate things, you know, all the time. This guy, he didn't realize he's walking right into it. Boy, he walked right into it trying to tell her. He didn't know the answer to the question that he asked. You know, he's presenting this idea that she didn't somehow read or prepare for what she was coming on to do, as if she is a law professor who tests people every day, asks them to answer hypothetical questions every day. She's prepared for that kind of stuff all the time, that she's going to walk into this most important, probably, appearance in her life. She's going to walk into it unprepared. Come on, man.
Well, you know, you've had law professors, right? I've had engineering professors, and I can speak to the engineering ones. And I want you to speak to the law professors you have, but I can promise you, I never went into a class where any instructor that I've ever had was not prepared. Obscenely prepared.
Yeah, they have to be the most prepared. And yeah, it's terrifying. It's terrifying to walk into a class not having read your assignment. It's terrifying to walk into your class having read the assignment, but not fully contemplated every piece of it and thinking it through in the way that, how's my professor going to see this? What kind of questions is she or he going to ask me about? I hope to God today I don't get called on because I'm going to be embarrassed.
Right. You know? Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in classrooms. I have instructed on floors at schools with people far higher ranked than I am. And I had to be prepared. So that's just on a floor. That's not at Congress, in front of Congress, on national or, you know, even worldwide television, where from the moment I stepped in that room until the end of time, I am part of history. Do you really think that none of us are going to be prepared for what we're about to do? Let alone a fucking law professor? I guess my biggest question to you then is, do you think he really thought that these folks were ill prepared, or do you think, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, that he was intimidated and wanted to, that was his way of dealing with the intimidation of having four law professors sitting in front of him?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a little bit of that. And I think he probably felt like he could control the situation to some extent, that these folks who are guests of Congress, and guests of this Judiciary Committee probably wouldn't want to swing back at him because, you know, they know their place, so to speak. They're guests, they're invited guests who are there to kind of interpret things. And they're not there to take swings at, at, at Congress people, right? As a general rule, they're going to hear their questions. They're there to talk about their interpretation of the Constitution, their interpretation of impeachments. So he probably felt like I could take a real good swing at her or anybody and not get hit back. But yeah, he was sadly mistaken. He really was sadly mistaken in that regard.
Yeah, if you're going to have me, and you know, you too, trust me, because I know how good you are. You're going to have me be in a position where I am an authority on something. Don't try to smack me down.
Right.
Because that's not going to work. And don't try to dictate what I'm going to say or how I'm going to approach things. I mean, if I'm coming there as a subordinate, then absolutely you can do that. And I'm going to acquiesce and let you do it. But if I'm sitting there as the expert, don't you dare try to smack me down, because I'll just embarrass the hell out of you. And that's exactly what she did. And you would do the exact same thing.
And especially on the area of expertise, right? So yeah. I mean, I will give everybody listening, and this isn't this, I'm proud. I'm very proud of this fact. It's not that I did anything super special to get to it. But I'm proud of, you know, I'll just phrase it this way. I'm proud of the opportunity to have experienced these things in my life. I was very blessed to experience them in my life, and I'm thankful to God and anybody that put me in this position. So when I came to Maryland, I was able to work in a very, very nice, big law firm that had a lot of influence. It's not the wealthiest law firm in the world, but it's a very powerful law firm. It's called Maryland Legal Aid. Maryland Legal Aid is a statewide law firm, and it's so well respected that the legislature in the state of Maryland frequently calls upon us as experts to testify in matters that affect constituents across the state of Maryland. And because of the position I was in, they would often call me to either organize folks who are directly affected by these events or pieces of legislation, proposed legislation, or they would ask me to testify. And having been like indoctrinated for the first time, or initiated, I guess is a better way, for the first time, maybe in 2013 or 2014, to have that opportunity to go down and actually testify in Annapolis, I was cautioned, not because anybody thought that I would step outside of the lines, but because they said, look, you're a litigation attorney. You're not necessarily always, you haven't always been in the role of a traditional advocate for the community. Mm-hmm. So you may want to battle with people when they challenge your position or when they challenge your ideas. But when you're in front of the legislature, in front of these committees, always show deference, always show restraint. Just listen to them. Let them make their point. If they bluster on about something, let them do it. Let it roll off your back. And just address what's important and why it's important. Never like come back at the person.
Never take it personally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, initiation. It was indoctrination, because it was the idea that you want to get called back again. You want to be invited back again. And you're going to always get more flies with honey than you are with vinegar too, right?
Correct.
You may even change people's position or perception on something if you continue to just address the points and the facts without getting personal with somebody, even though they made it personal with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so surprising to me that what he did was he wanted to take that shot at her. He did make it personal with her. And I think he thought that she had been prepped in much the similar way that I had been prepped. And most of the time, look, they see witnesses all the time. They do this all the time. Collins probably thought he wasn't going to get it back from her. Like I said, he was sadly mistaken. She gave it back to him.
Well, let me ask you another question, Frank. If you were in that position, and it doesn't have to be in front of Congress or whatever, right? It doesn't have to be that grand a scale, but still be in that position. It could be something as small as a local government type thing, right? Or, you know, it doesn't have to be state. It could be something local. But you're in that position. If you don't bring your A game, you're not going to be in that position again. Am I right?
That's right. They've got tons of other people that they can call in to do it. And they've got people that they want to call in that suit their purpose, that can be the voice piece or the mouthpiece that they want to hear from, or they could just truly be calling an expert. And if they, you know, either way, they've got lots of other people to choose from. So you've got to be on your game. Absolutely.
You've got to be on your game. And if you're not, how much longer are you going to be at that law firm?
Not very long, right? They're going to find a different role for you. They'll find something that's suited better for your talents as opposed to those that get up and speak to those issues. So, right. Yeah.
So if you want to stay in that role, you better bring it. Because if you don't, somebody else is going to.
That's right.
Yeah. And you know, that's a far bigger difference than somebody who just has to bullshit 51% of the people in a district. Well, Frank, great podcast. Absolutely fantastic podcast.
Can't wait for next week. It's going to be a big one, Patsy.
I am so excited about next week, folks. We're going to try to make it as special as we possibly can. We're hoping for a lot. I don't want to say anything about what we're going to do because I don't want to say something that have somebody or something fall through. So I don't want to, but Frank and I are talking about it and we have a few things in mind that we want to do. Hopefully we have a few people who are going to join us. We have a few people in particular that we want to join us and hopefully it all works out. And it's just going to be a fantastic, 52nd 1 year anniversary episode. I'm so looking forward to it. So, before we throw this in the can, Frank, is there anything you want to say to everybody?
Just, really appreciate, as you always say, folks joining us, but I really appreciate you, Patsy, for continuing to give us this format and to keep us moving along, and bringing the stories that we tell and our viewpoint to the people that tune in to hear us say this. So thank you, Patsy, for continuing to provide us this format. And, people stay tuned, continue to call your congresspeople, continue to stay involved and active in politics because really they are supposed to be serving us and your voice should be heard. So in whatever way you can participate and contribute, please continue to do so.
Yes, participate in any way you can. Never let anybody make choices for you. With that said, as always, like we say every week, and we've said it for almost a year now, next week will be a year. Your time is very valuable, everybody. The fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. You really do not understand or do not fathom just how appreciative we are to everybody who tunes in and downloads the podcast. So with that being said, for Frank and myself, until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't understand that reference, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. But until next week, until our 1 year, 52nd episode, goodbye, good luck, and God bless.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Butchered Sports. Raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Hey, wait a minute. I think I've got it.
Thanks for listening to Holy Shit with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Shit.